Hello and welcome to Season 2 of the Principal Learnings Podcast. If you're a principal or educational leader looking to enhance your skills, this is a place for you. So let's get into it. Let's embark on this learning journey together. So in this episode is the first of a three-part series with Rob Stone, who is one of the original creators, designers, and facilitators of the New South Wales Primary Principals Association's Art of Leadership program. Rob is also a facilitator of the Art of Leadership Masterclass. This podcast is the first of a three-part series with Rob Stones, and we have deliberately structured our podcast in with a series with Rob, as it allows us to take on the vast amount of knowledge and wisdom that he shares in our conversation. In this first episode with Rob, we discuss Rob's background, his ethos in education, and how the Art of Leadership program is so critical in developing your leadership skills. Rob Stones, welcome. Thank you for being available and talking to us about, really, we're going to be going into several directions. Firstly is to talk about your professional learning journey and what led you to where you are today and what inspires you to continue to work in educational leadership.
My learning journey was upon at the start of my career. I got an early leadership position, wasn't much good at it. Got better, but became pretty much the sort of leader who tried to do what people above him in the hierarchy told them to do, and plodded on like that. And then went to Bamaga for my first principalship. So Bamaga was then the northernmost school on the tip of the Cape York Peninsula. Very isolated, 100 and something kids. So a very small secondary school. And when I say 100 and something kids, when I first went there, 20 kids come to school the first morning. The rest stayed doing what they were doing, fishing exploring the bush and riding wild horses and all sorts of things. So straight away I was no longer in the little bubble where, in a mainstream community, the parents chase the kids to school. I had to do something different. And, very early on, teachers who've been there for a while, which is not many, because Bamaga turn over very quickly. But teachers who've been there for a while, they'll come to school if they think it's worthwhile. So what are we doing to attract them to school? In a way that was seminal to everything that drove my leadership since then, because for me, since then, leadership has always been about what are we doing to provide the best and most attractive service for the students of our school, for the kids, for the children.
So how did you go with that? That you've placed in this isolated area, you're very green, and you underplayed it, but you even said I wasn't much good at it. So I think that may be an understatement, but where was your mind in terms of thinking there?
Well, I mean, obviously at the time I was thought I was doing okay, and so that's a retrospective judgment that I wasn't much good at it. I was obviously doing well enough to get a job as a principal, albeit right on the extremes of the state, so I wasn't at anybody's top of anybody's list. But I took some books with me, and one of the books I took to read, because I knew I'd have some time, as was Bill Glass's Schools Without Failure. So I started talking about to my staff is, how do we turn this into a school where there's no failure, and would the kids come to school if they felt successful? And the answers to the last was yes, the kids will come to school if they think they're being successful. Could we turn Bamaga High School there into that school? Well, we tried. My predecessor had made some steps. There's right next to the school was a farm that had been long I don't think was ever successful, and it long run overgrown by bush. But he started off, he had the idea that if we cleared the farm, we could do a lot of useful learning that people could use on site in the Northern Peninsula. So I continued that initiative and started to look for all sorts of other reasons. We did an array of things. We did, we turned our art program around so that a lot of the traditional artifacts, so it's a carving community basically, most of the traditional artifacts are carved, but we used all the mediums that we could to allow the kids to do create traditional artifacts in a non-traditional way. And we found that lots of students and their parents really enjoyed that. You know, and we did lots and lots of tweaks, and very much we worked on the relationship between students and teachers, and absolutely. So Glasser had three key messages. Okay, and the first was develop good relationship with the students. The second is be non-coercive. If you bully the kids, they won't come to school, or they won't do well. And the third thing is, still have clear boundaries. So the school's got boundaries, and if the kids think the school doesn't have boundaries, or that the class teacher doesn't have boundaries, then nothing productive will happen. So that the process is not I am the authority figure, and I'll bully you to get what I want, but the process is I'm someone who's developing a good relationship with you. You can trust me, but there are boundaries in this relationship and in this classroom, okay, and we're going to stick with it, both you and I. I can promise you that I'll, he picked up the unconditional positive regard piece. And if we show us unconditional positive regard, then students will test us. But then after they've tested us for a while, they'll figure out that we do really care about them. So they'll work with us. So that was Glasser's pretty clear message in Schools Without Failure, as it has been through all of the books about education that he's written. So we tried to do that, and it was fun. We did things with the kids. You know, the teachers would play volleyball after school, and all the kids, heaps of kids would come and join in, and really nice to see kids come back from the holidays. They straight away come and give the teachers a hug, you know, and say, "Look, I'm glad to be back," and so on. So it was a nice atmosphere to be in. But it was isolated, and there were some things you couldn't control. You know? So if there was a funeral or a tombstone opening, so after a funeral, they make the tombstone, and then they open the tombstone so that, you know, it's like the opening of a public building. So both those things are holidays. Okay, funerals are holidays. Tombstone openings are holidays. If there's a tombstone opening in a distant community or out on one of the islands, all the families go.
Yep.
So all of a sudden we're back to 10 kids at school again. Just have to live with the rhythms of that. Then when they're back, they come to school and we do some good work.
Yeah, it's understanding what you can control and what you can't control. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But I guess what the purpose of that long story is to say, like, it changed my thinking about leadership. You know, I'm not just ticking the boxes for leading a school. I'm now someone who works with his staff to try and provide the best possible service for the student community that we serve. And so I took that into my other principalships, and it's very much a part of the workshop programs that I teach and the executive coaching I do. The the traditional ways of doing things, running everything as if it's a hierarchy, you know, the boss tells the deputies what to do and the deputies tell the teachers what to do, and everybody kind of rubs along even if nobody's terribly happy about it, is never going to work with my way of thinking about leadership. So when I'm running a leadership workshop, I have to present it as a ways of connecting so strongly with your teaching staff, and understanding your kids and your teachers so well that we're influencing them, we're getting the best out of them.
Yeah, so it's really understanding your context and relating that knowledge you have into that context. Importantly,
yes,
underpinned by Glass's theories, and also, but more importantly, is ensuring there's trust and connection prior to any learning taking, a high quality learning taking place.
Yes, because whatever you read in the area of education and interpersonal relationships, you get the same message. You know, Glasser's not the only internal control psychology theorists. You know, there are heaps and heaps of others. Mm. Edward Deci and his organization, the selfdeterminationtheory.org, you can go to his website. Glasser wasn't a researcher, but Deci's researched all this stuff. You know, what's the effect of coercion on kids? What's the effect of rewards on kids? What's the effect of threatening to kids? What's the effect of good relationships with young people? The theoretical framework on which this work is based is very strong now. And in The Art of Leadership, for example, we gather all of that theoretical framework to try to convince leaders who attend The Art of Leadership that their main job is to connect with everybody in their community. Mm-hmm. You know, we take that further in the Art of Leadership Masterclass, because it's called, I think we call it something like Vibrant Leadership for Connected Communities. And it's about taking that even further and making sure that everybody's connected, not just with each other, but with the key ideas that the school is operating on, so that nobody's asking at any time, why are we doing this? They know why we're doing it.
Mm. We will go to the Art of Leadership, Rob, with the work that you have established, and there's a rich history with the New South Wales Primary Principals Association. I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, there are over 61 programs held since 2013. The Art of Leadership, so for a program such a long, rich history, are you able to share some of the success stories or outcomes that have resulted from your teaching?
Well, I think that it's practical. You know, there's theory underpinning everything in it, but there's a lot of skill building and a lot of ways of thinking practically about, as a principal, what do you do with people? How do you bring them all together? Because understandably, systems, you know, an education system or in the, you know, we didn't teach in the private Catholic system, but I have done some programs there, and it's the same. They have a system, and the system tells them to do things, and the system is about schooling, not necessarily about education. I'm not critical of it. It couldn't possibly be different from how it is. The only thing that can make a difference is leaders in the school. And they can make a difference because they can shift, they can either use their position power autocratically to make things happen, or they can use their inspiration and personal influence to persuade people to go along with them and to adopt the measures that they advocate for. And the difference is engagement and commitment. You know, you can have a school staff who are strongly engaged with the purpose of the school, who absolutely understand the purpose of what they're all trying to do together. You can have a group of people who learn together right? And they're willing to kind of dig in together to the details and learn from each other. You know, one teacher's having extraordinary success with a class or a group of students. Other people want to know what they're doing. And you can have that. You set up that kind of context, or you can set up the kind of context where everybody just has to plod through the curriculum, do their best with their own class, and where every now and again there are abrupt changes of direction because something has changed outside the school in the context, or they've got a new instruction from the Department of Education or something. So they, I mean, inevitably schools are going to get new instructions from the Department of Education. But because systems really want what schools want, which is the kids to do well and the teachers to be engaged and committed, you just have to tweak whatever the message is and still keep doing the same thing. I mean, in all my career, nobody ever told me, Rob, you're getting too much enthusiasm and commitment from your teachers, or your teachers have got too good a relationship with the students. No, that's not going to happen. Those things are supported, but they can't be imposed from the outside. So the bureaucracy, if you like, does its best to think about what might improve things, but because they're not in the school, they can't do it. So only the people in the school can do it. So, and we try to get that message across very strongly in the Art of Leadership. And, you know, it's gratifying that quite a few, you know, experienced principals have said to Judy or I after the 6 days of the Art of Leadership, you know, I've been a principal for 10 years, sometimes 20 years, and now I suddenly understand what my job really is. And that's gratifying to hear that kind of thing.
It's that light bulb moment, and as a participant myself, I can attest to that changing light bulb things that do come through the course. It's that reflection of practice, but giving the time to actually explore and delve into, and it's a real key to the success of the work of the structure of having a phase one and then having a consolidation of the phase two. Yeah, yeah. It's remarkable in terms of just, it's our key, I would say, well, it is, it's our crown jewel to the professional learning suite. So you alluded to the masterclass. Are you able to, without giving too much away, are you able to give us an insight of what participants who are considering the masterclass would be signing up for or you'd be exploring?
So what happens in the masterclass is, first of all, everybody's already done the Art of Leadership, but they come with imperfectly remembered knowledge inevitably, because, you know, we shove them, you know, people say that wrong thing with the Art of Leadership, it seems it's 6 days, so it's stretched out, but there's so much. So they come, and the first part of it is an opportunity for us to work on clarifying some of the ideas that came through the Art of Leadership and deepening their understanding of them. And then the what goes on from there is to delve more deeply into some of the themes of the Art of Leadership, particularly the relationships. So how do you and coaching, how do you use this coaching model, not just one-to-one, but with your whole staff? How do you use an understanding of how groups work together to change the culture and ethos of your school? And this is masterclass, only a 3-day program, so it's pretty fast, but we make sure that there's enough discussion and exchanging ideas so that, just as in the original Art of Leadership, people will learn as much from the discussions with each other as they do from the facilitators. And it culminates in some quite profound self-reflective activities. You know, what am I going to do to create what I want? And what is it? Because it's so easy in life to think I have a picture out here, a dream out here of what I want to create. Okay, and I'm going to do my best to get other people to help me create it. And what's central is that you only achieve that dream if you change. it used to be called transformational leadership. These days, that's not a popular word, but it's a good way of understanding it. If you want something to be different, you have to be different. You have to persuade your teachers to be different. And then when you're different, you know, as Gandhi said, we must become the change we want to see in the world. And I think that's absolutely the case.
You are the change. Yeah. Yes, you are the change. Rob, in terms of, in your opinion, and it is an opinion question, there are so many changing trends in educational leadership for our current leaders that are aspiring. What words of advice would you give, or for participants to, or people listening to, even potentially, should I say, avoid?
Well, look out for people selling magic bullets, because there aren't on them. You know, what we do is not a magic bullet. What we've tried to work on is presenting people with well-researched, well-grounded information that all is supported by the psychology of internal control, knowing that the only thing people can change is what they can directly influence, and mostly that's just themselves. So while we've got this really clear understanding of how people work and how children work, and we build on that some really quite substantial ideas that are proven by research to work, and then if a leader grounds their work in that, then they're likely to be successful. But because, I often talk about the political cycle, the politicians want change today, not in 3 years' time, and making change in a school does take some years. So there are, always people wanting to produce magic bullets that the politicians grab hold of and say, maybe if we do that, so think about how the language wars have gone over the years. A new fad came in, and everybody followed the new fad. And it took years to figure out that the new fad didn't give people enough structural understanding of language to leave them well short of what would be effective. And then structured literacy is at the moment making a comeback. But the truth is, all these things work what's central is that you only achieve that dream if you change.
If you're a principal or educational leader looking to enhance your skills, this is a place for you. This season, we'll be showcasing a wide range of professional learning experiences designed with your success in mind. We'll continue to focus on the values of well-being, leadership growth, as well as optimizing school operations. Curious to learn more about our offerings? You'll find our full catalogue on our website at www.newsouthwalespa.org.au/catalogue. Or you can easily book your next professional learning experience at www.nswppa.org.au/professional-learning-calendar-bookings. If you or your network is interested in further professional learning through the New South Wales Primary Principals Association, reach out to me directly, djanetsky@newsouthwalespa.org.au. I look forward to hearing from you soon.